Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about getting more people involved with Linux with the Linux Presentation Day happening all over Europe. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 407, recorded October 11th, 2016, Linux Presentation Day. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, MerlinSunage.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and unaware of it, projects you might want to download right after the show, and occasionally we talk about things that aren't directly project related but are sort of different. Apparently they let anybody do this show. All right, hey, let's go ahead and bring on my co-host for this week, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall, speaking of something different, here I am.
There you go. Hey, that was a nice segue. That was even wonderful. For those of you looking at the video stream, you'll see that I am once again in my brother's den here in somewhere between Olympia and Seattle. And in fact, if you're really really have good eyes, you'll notice right over my left shoulder, there is the number 12 insignia for the Seahawks. If you're a Seahawks fan, you know the 12th man issues. And my brother is a big Seahawks fan. So that's why we see this over the back of my shoulder. So I am just north of Olympia, Washington. Where are we speaking to you, Aaron? Where are you speaking to us? Let's get it right.
Yes, as usual, I am here in my lair, my secret lair, where I do all of my electronics and coding, otherwise known as my office.
Yeah. Well, that'll work. Yes, my office is mostly a 20-pound Tom Bin backpack that I carry around with me to all over the world. That thing's been in probably like 35 countries now. I've been in 57, but I've had this bag only for about the last 4 or 5 years, this particular one. And so let's continue on. The show's not about us. The show's about the people we bring on and chat with about the projects that are interesting to them. Today is no exception. We have we're going to be bringing on Dr. Christoph Zimmermann, who's going to be talking to us about Linux Presentation Day. And from what I could read about this particular project, it is a sort of an intro to Linux for people who are not yet, probably don't have Linux installed yet already. Maybe there's nobody near them that's using Linux, or maybe there are people and they just say, come use this Linux thing. And we want to have some place where people can go to get sort of their intro to Linux. They've been holding these apparently twice a year for the last couple of years, and they're being held from the map, it looks like, all over Europe on the very same day, which, if I read the website correctly, looks like just coming up, October 22nd, which, my goodness, is only, 11 days from today. So we'll have to talk about what kind of preparations Chris is doing and what kind of preparations are happening in all the various cities and countries that are happening there. But that's all great questions for him. But the reason I have you on, Aaron, is because you know a bit more about Linux than I do. I'm still sort of mystified by Linux. Like, I still don't know why there's both an apt command and an apt get command. What difference between the two? And when do I use one and when do I use the other? But you know a little bit more about that. And tell me why you know a little bit more about that, other than the fact that you're much more experienced in Linux than I am.
Well, I mean, this is mystifying, actually. And I'm actually writing a book called Linux for Makers, which is focused at the maker community. So it's a little bit different than your typical Linux user guide book. But a lot of what I'm finding as I'm going through and writing the book is that there's things just like you just mentioned, right? When do I use, what is synaptic and what is apt? What's apt? What about app cache? What does that do? There's like all of these quirky things about Linux that if you've been using Linux for a long time like I have, it's just like, oh yeah, of course that's what you do. But if you haven't been using Linux very long or at all, it can be quite scary to take your first baby steps into Linux, because it sounds different. It sounds complicated. When you've seen probably videos online or heard someone talk about Linux, it's all command line and do this and do that. How do they know how to do that? I don't know. So I think this type of event, at least from what I've read online and what I understand about the event, we'll find out in a minute, is really, really important for new users just to get their feet wet a little bit, have a chance in a kind of protective environment to come in and take a look at Linux and use Linux. So I just think it's different than a Linux conference where you get everybody eating their own dog food. We're all experts. Hey, what's the latest patch you're running? Blah, blah, blah. This is actually for newbies, and I think it's really, really important. So I'm excited to learn more about it.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that somebody's actually doing that out there. And some people may say, well, wait, how long have you been involved in open source and just computing in general? Well, I grew up with the BSD family of things. I was using version 6 of Unix back in the early day. And then along came version 7, the one true Unix, as I like to keep calling it, which fit entirely. I still can't even get the scale of this. Fit entirely in 32K. K, let me get that right, not meg, 32K the thing fit in, PDP-11 assembly code, and only a tiny bit assembly, mostly actually in C code, and that's what I grew up with, and so that, of course, begat the BSD family of code, so the BSD is the heir apparent to all that. And Linux came in sort of from the side, from totally re-implemented stuff, so to the degree that I have control over it, I prefer the BSD style interactions because I'm familiar a lot more with them. And so I'm not much of a Linux expert, but I do know somebody who actually is a Linux expert, and we'll be bringing him on immediately, actually. So Dr. Christoph Zimmermann, welcome to the show.
Hi, Randall. Hi, Aaron. How are things?
Very good. Very good. And where are you speaking to us from?
Frankfurt, Germany, actually.
Okay, well, hi to everyone in Germany over there. I've been there a couple of times. It's actually part of my heritage. I'm one quarter German, so I occasionally want to spend more time there than just the one day the cruise ships allow me to spend there. So someday I'll get back and actually get some more time there. So talk to us about the Linux Presentation Day. How did it get started? And what, I guess I could say, what problem is it trying to solve?
Sure, no problem. But before I do this, actually, as a matter of fact, BSD is pretty much like Linux. You still have command line. You still have things to type on that command line. So the kernel may be different, but the rest is pretty much the same, especially if you're looking at the user land. So much for consolation. I hope that clarifies things a bit. And Aaron, it's very interesting to hear that you're actually writing a book on Linux. More than happy to give you a hand here if you need a second opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll include you in my review process.
I am a doctor at the end of the day, so I just might be able to help.
That's okay. Great. What are you a doctor of, by the way?
I did my PhD actually on reflective operating system architectures about 20 years ago. Think of a predecessor to Java's Reflection API.
Cool. So we have a real expert with us today, Randall.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. That's always handy when that happens. Okay, so back to the question. How did Linux Presentation Day get started?
Okay, Linux Presentation Day. It goes back to a community event called Linux Day that has been up and running in Germany for the last 10 years. But because of various circumstances, it shut down in 2013, if I'm not completely mistaken. So the Berlin LUG, as in Linux User Group, decided to do something in place of the original Linux Day and created something called the Linux Presentation Day. It's in contrast to the Linux Day, which was only taking place in Berlin for, I think, with one or two exceptions. The Linux Presentation Day is a pan-German-speaking country event. Well, at least that it's set out that way when it was first created last year. But this year, as a matter of fact, as you can see from the map, we are looking at a pan-European event, which has its own set of challenges. Thank you, Aaron. So essentially what we're looking at, starting from the UK right up to Poland and also Greece, for some reason, Italy and Spain that have two countries which have just, well, actually Italy is on there, but Spain has just, I think, confirmed, at least for a couple of cities, their participation. The way it works is a true community event. That means each and every location, as in city, is doing their, in inverted commas, own thing. So more often than not, you would have a Linux user group organizing this particular instance of the Linux presentation day, where we strive to do it on one day. Each and every LUG is essentially responsible for doing their own logistics, their own marketing, their own PR, but also have then the freedom to stick to a date of their choosing. So as a matter of fact, and I'm going to go into the details in a minute, the LUG in Frankfurt, where I am part of, or which I'm part of, decided to do its Linux presentation day on the 3rd of October already, meaning it took place on Monday last week. The reason for this being a media cooperation with one of the biggest broadcasters in Germany, as in public broadcasters, a station by the name of WDR, which stands for Western German Broadcasting Station. The main reason is that we decided to divert a little bit from the original format. The way we did it last year was essentially one day for Linux newbies, i.e. people who don't have a Linux background, have heard about it, are probably scared at that time that Windows XP was going out of service as an end of life for Microsoft, and were looking to a viable alternative in contrast to Windows 7, Windows 8, and then the upcoming Windows 10, and maybe even macOS, with their own set of particular problems. Privacy probably being the most important one. Data security following up next. So this year we decided to run it in cooperation with the WDR. The WDR runs one of the most famous kids programs in Germany called The Show with the Mouse. The show with the mouse, you can check it out, D-Mouse, I think, Google it, WDR D-Mouse, reaches about, I would reckon, I don't have firm numbers in front of me, about 70% of kids in the age bracket between 6 and 11, 12 years of age. They run something called the Door Opener Day on a fixed date. That happens to be the 3rd of October for the last 6 years. Or maybe that even 7, actually. The idea behind this is that institutions like companies, associations, whatever you name it, open their doors, which are normally closed to the public, especially for these kids coming along on that present day. So for the first time in history for the LUG in Frankfurt, we decided to open our doors for this particular format. So last Monday, we gathered around 8 o'clock to set the venue up. We had about 25 kids coming in at 10 o'clock, and then we had a six-hour program or format, if you will, of exercises, workshops, tutorials, especially for kids on Linux, starting with the overall idea of open source software and what that means, right up to how do I do my first presentation with LibreOffice Impress, and how do I do my first steps in programming using Scratch. We gathered feedback, we handed out feedback sheets, and the prevailing opinion was we want to come back next year.
Awesome. That's great. I mean, I think this is really important, as I mentioned in the beginning, because at least in my experience, now it may be different in Germany, I don't know, but at least in my experience, there's always been Linux users groups, or not always, but there are Linux users groups. There are Linux conferences. But the type of people that you get at those, number one, they aren't children, first of all. Second of all, they tend to be people that have used Linux before. They're not newbies, if you will. I'm not trying to denigrate anyone. But they're not people that are new to Linux. And so I still think that there's a barrier for people getting started with Linux, or to even know about Linux, or to know that that there's an alternative. Are you finding that to be true through your program?
Absolutely. When we first introduce Linux to the kids, well, an operating system is an operating system. What's the big deal? What's the difference? But slowly, there was one key moment when we first basically positioned Linux at the beginning of that day. Two of them at the age, I think they were 10 to 11, already had their own YouTube channel. So what they didn't know, of course, is that the majority of the Google ecosystem runs on Linux. Mm-hmm. Something that they found quite particularly interesting when they were actually using Linux in the background, when they were uploading videos to their YouTube channel. Also, the majority of the kids had already previous exposure to something called Android. What they didn't know, of course, is that beneath all that layer, all these layers of proprietary software, as issued by Google, a true Linux system runs at the very heart of it, i.e. the kernel. These were two eye-opener moments for them, how prevailing Linux in the real world really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use that example all the time, not just with my kids, but in Makerspace that I run as well. People are used to running macOS. They're used to running Windows. They don't realize that the systems that they interact with on the internet, for the most part, and their phones also run Linux. I want to go back to a question that we had actually from the chat room, because we get this, and it's close to a question that I wanted to ask as well. Plutonium Shore asked, what flavor of Linux is the most useful in the Linux world? I would change that question a little bit to say, do you feel that there's so many flavors of Linux out there? There's Ubuntu, there's Red Hat, there's Debian, straight Debian, there's, all these different distributions and everything. Do you feel like that helps or hurts people as they're trying to learn about Linux?
Well, very interesting question. Especially if you think about the general flaws operating system ecosystem, because even BSD has its own three flavors, right? There's OpenBSD, there's NetBSD, and there's FreeBSD. Randall, correct me if I'm wrong.
It's about 12, but go ahead. Yes.
Okay. I only use FreeBSD, so I don't know. Anyway, yeah. FOSS operating systems are pretty much like cars, right? You know one, you basically know them all. Jokes aside, the trouble is basically if I endorse a particular distribution right now, I probably will get shot. So let me tell you something from my past experience. Especially going back to Monday of last week, there used to be at least something called Edubuntu out there that was intended to be a particular flavor of Ubuntu destined for the educational use. I don't think that it's still out there because I haven't seen it recently on DistroWatch, but maybe I should check again. We had Mint desktops at the day. The reason for choosing Mint was primarily that it comes with a lot of software pre-installed and has all the nice features like codecs and all the rest of it pre-installed. So there's not much effort with getting Mint onto a particular machine. Essentially, what we had to do is just post-install Scratch after the installation, and that was basically it, because LibreOffice came as part of the installation process. So the barrier of installing Mint, and quite a few parents who were also present at the day brought their laptops with them to install Linux on it or on these desktops, was quite low. Some of them had used Debian and I think some variants of Ubuntu previously, but they were really impressed by the ease of use of using Mint. Let me tell you a little bit more about the day. We had like tutorials and workshops, but we had long breaks in between where the parents could ask questions about Linux in general and their particular problems, challenges, whatever they had if they had been using Linux already. And needless to say, each and every one of the machines that we brought had, of course, the typical games ecosystem installed on them, like Extreme Tux Racer, some sort of Tetris, some other puzzles like Mahjong or whatever. So the kids had plenty of games to play during the breaks, which I think was pretty important because, yes, computers are a means to get work done, but at the end of the day, you should also be able to have fun with these machines. So it's just not their Windows desktops for games or their macOS machines, whatever. No, it's also Linux. And we, on purpose, we didn't have any kind of violence-endorsing games like Eagle Shooters or something like that installed on the machines because we wanted to be correct in that sense. So, but even games like Tux Racer, where you essentially have to steer a penguin through an alpine setting, racing downhill, was quite a lot of fun for the majority of the kids. And when it came down to Scratch, I don't know if you know Scratch, Aaron and Randall.
Yeah.
You know Scratch. Okay. This is basically where we really hit the nail on the head because most of the comments were, or most of the questions that we got was actually, how can I install Scratch on my machine if I have Linux installed already, or how do I install Linux on my machine so that I can use Scratch?
Interesting. What do you think? I'm kind of curious now, since you've gone through this process. I mean, what I find that people with Linux are either older, I shouldn't say older, let's say my age. They've tried Linux in the past, maybe, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. It was still kind of clunky. They didn't like it. And then there was a lot of innovation and developments going on at that point with Windows and macOS. And so they kind of gravitated there. And they still have this perception of Linux being very clunky and hard to install and all this kind of stuff. Or on the other extreme, I see kids who use modern Linux, especially Linux Mint. I'm so glad to hear you say that because that's the one I always recommend people try first. But I hear kids pick it up and they don't – it's not that they don't know the difference. It's that they don't seem to mind. It's so equivalent in their mind. They're used to using, you know, Android and things like that. Have you seen that in your – you know, in the work that you've done in terms of – kind of, I don't want to say there's a bias against Linux, but just this, you know, adults that are like, I don't really want to try this, and kids that are like, I don't really care.
Interesting question, because we exactly met that perception not just last Monday, but rather on the day we did in November of last year when we had our first Linux presentation day in Frankfurt. Essentially, what we brought to the table were a stock Ubuntu then and Mint. The current versions. And one comment that we really got, quite a few people brought their laptops with them with a separate partition to get Linux installed on the day on that separate partition. And I think we had, what, 5 or 6 laptops where we installed Mint, and only one of them, due to a BIOS challenge, didn't get it installed on that particular day. So that tells you a lot about the ease of use with Mint, or Ubuntu in general, getting it installed on laptop, because essentially what you do is either you have a burned CD at hand or simply use a live distro that you have put onto a USB stick, boot from the USB stick, tell the main screen to install it on your partition, and Ubuntu, Mint, whatever, will guide you through this partitioning, exercise, or this partition selection process. So there's not a lot of room for error. And within 20 minutes, half an hour max, depending on your hardware, you have a running Ubuntu partition or Linux partition, including a full desktop, any Office applications that comes with the live installation media and all the rest of it, running on your desktop or running on your laptop rather. It's come a long way. I can recall when I installed my first Slackware back in 95, and that took me a full afternoon to get it up and running on a i386 back in the day. But now it's as simple as inserting a USB key into a USB port, booting the machine, and then being taken by the hand and then guided through the installation process. No big deal. As a matter of fact, when I helped to install a macOS or reinstall a macOS instance recently on a Mac, that was slightly more painful even because there was some custom hardware where, how do I tether an Android phone through USB with macOS? Now, the trick is doing that without third-party software. The jury is still out on this.
Yeah.
In Linux, you simply plug it into the USB port. Network manager detects it's a tethered USB device running a network, and off you go. You have connectivity then and there.
I'm kind of curious because this is an argument I make all the time for Linux. Did you talk about the and maybe this was a maybe this is too deep for your audience on that day? But I mean, did you talk about the kernel and how the drivers are built in? A lot of the drivers are built in, or drivers have been written for legacy things, and you can just plug and play. Was that important to people?
With that type of audience, you don't necessarily go onto that technical level of detail. There was a printer where we had to fiddle around a little bit with the corresponding USB drivers, but apart from that, it was plain sailing. You don't normally get that type of audience on a Linux presentation day. The LUG in Frankfurt runs two monthly events, i.e., a regular slot. Think of it like a mixture of an installation party and general FAQ session, normally done in a pub on the second Monday in a given month, and then we have talks as informal presentations on the fourth Tuesday of a month. But even then, people would bring their laptop, and you would get a much more technical audience on these two dates.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm kind of curious too, did you help people, and you may have said this, I may have just missed it when you were talking, but did you help people set up dual boot on those machines, or were you strictly wiping out all the partitions and installing from scratch?
That was basically down to their preference. Some people said, I want to get rid of XP completely because I don't trust Microsoft anymore, especially with Windows 8 and phoning home. But some of them actually had a separate partition prepared already, or we could actually shrink the Windows partition and then put it next, and then put Linux next to the existing Windows partition.
Interesting.
Both was possible.
I find that really interesting. Is that? Do you feel that there's a difference? Because I think there is, at least in privacy concerns in different countries. I think that perhaps it's more prevalent in European countries where they're a little bit mistrustful maybe of American companies like Microsoft and Google. I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
Interesting question. I think the privacy debate is really hot here in Germany. Quite a few mainstream Macs ran full-blown articles, as in almost kind of feature articles, on how to prevent the automatic update from Windows 8 to Windows 10. As in, you had this kind of automatic update, which would then be nagging you for a couple of months to upgrade to Windows 10, and that created a lot of media stir here in Germany. And we actually saw this in the monthly slots, as in the daily work that we do at the Linux user group here in Frankfurt, that we had an increasing number of inquiries about this particular challenge. Let's put it this way, i.e., how do I get rid of A, this automatic update, or B, how do I actually, what is a viable alternative to this Microsoft software where I'm unsure what of my data is actually then transferred to the US? As part of my daily work, when I use Windows, what does Microsoft know about me? That was quite a significant concern for your average Windows user, for your Joe Average using Windows on a daily basis.
So let's back up a little bit more basic stuff here. I give Aaron a break now since he's asked like 20 questions in a row. So first off, I do want to say I'm going to challenge a statement you made earlier. Yes, BSD land has LS and Linux has LS, but at that point they diverge because, you know, LS in the Linux land was created by an entirely different group of people than the one that created the one for BSD. The BSD ones are all inherited from the original real Unix. So I want to challenge that the user lands are in fact different as well, not just the kernels. So I do have problems going from one to the other because I can't remember which switches this particular LS has when my client makes me use Linux. But that's nitpicking. Let me get back to sort of like, you know, so I walk into one of these things. Am I only a kid? Now I'm only hearing about kids now. Is this for adults or is this just for kids? What's your target audience here?
We decided on purpose at the beginning of the year to give this a go with regard to this media cooperation with this kids show, just to try it out. Funny that you mentioned that because we just had the luck internal wrap-up session last night, and the consent was we want to do this next year, more likely than not. Because, we purposely said that we want to limit the audience to 25 kids. We reckoned that we would have 5 no-shows, so 20 kids being entertained for about 6 hours is a lot. We didn't have any no-shows, so there were 25 kids there. We had to close the guest list in around early July because of the popularity of the event. The mouse, of course, the show with the mouse had a website because thank you, that's it. It's even in English. That's amazing. WBR, this is the broadcaster. Okay.
Oh, cool.
Yes. They do this every year. There were about, I think, 6 or 7 locations in Frankfurt, but we were the only Linux user group because Frankfurt only has one. And I think we were the only community technology association doing a sort of mouse door opener day. So apparently that gained a lot of attention. I'm taking a look at the media evaluation, what happened after that. But the majority of the leads came actually through WDR. But because of that limit of 25 kids, we actually had to close the list in kind of mid-July. I think WDR put it out in the open around March or April timeframe, maybe even as late as May. But within a couple of months, actually, we had enough kids to say, now it's that's enough. There was a short waiting list of about 10 kids, but after that, we completely shut down any further acceptance of participants. I think we got about 50 inquiries in total. And for a first time, I think that was pretty impressive. With the attention now, I reckon we're going to get more traction next year. That is at least my take on the situation. Come back to Randall's question. Randall, do me a favor. Install a free BSD on any virtual machine you have lying around or even on physical hardware. Install GNOME on it. Put a Linux machine next to it. And do please tell me the difference between a GNOME 3 desktops between a GNOME 3 desktop on either hardware. If you stick to the GUI, chances are you won't be able to spot the difference. Agreed, if you go to on a command line level, things are different. In Ubuntu, it's on Debian, in any Debian derivative, it's APT. In BSD, at least in FreeBSD, it's package, as in PKG. But the principles are still the same. You have repos where you pull down the software. These repos have to be updated. There are caches between you and the repo. Same in Ubuntu, same in Linux, generally speaking, same in BSD. So the principles are still the same. They haven't really changed. The commands are different. Yes, the switches are certainly different. But as soon as you leave the command line, as in revert to the GUI, it's like a car. It's still four wheels, a steering wheel, it's gears or it's automatic, but it still gets you from A to B.
Okay, well, I'm deliberately not going to address that question, although I do have a real good challenge for that. But what I do want to do is keep focusing on Linux Presentation Day. So I get that the focus for, at least in Frankfurt, is about kids, but is this true in all the various countries? Is this only a kids-related thing? And if so, I did not take that away from your website.
No, it's not, because Frankfurt is the first LEG doing this with kids, and we've done it for the first time last week. The discussion last night was actually what we want to do is, and this is subject to confirmation with regards to manpower, with regards to finance and all the rest of it, we want to do a formal Linux Presentation Day during spring next year, and then another one for the kids in autumn in association with the Mouse Door Opener Day. The majority of the other Linux groups, like companies or whatever, are solely targeting the adult population, i.e. your ordinary Windows user, your ordinary adult having heard about Linux but not knowing an awful lot about it, so just going there and, like we did last year in Frankfurt, checking it simply out. That will be the main format of the Linux Presentation Day as we know it, as we have been running it for the last 2 years.
Is it likely that this is not, now back to the kids again just for a second. I was sort of curious earlier when you were talking about that. Is it likely that these kids have had computer exposure to Windows already, or are you exposing them to interacting with computers for the first time in your presentations in Germany?
Depending on the age bracket, of course. Unfortunately, the schools here in Germany, more often than not, are simply, I'm exaggerating a bit and I'm being provocative at the same time, are Microsoft training facilities. Because come primary school, you get exposed to Windows. You get exposed to the ecosystem, to the application ecosystem running on top of Windows with no viable alternative. It has a lot to do with commercials, because Microsoft is giving the schools a good deal for a reason, of course. But right up to secondary school, it's Windows only. So more often than not, kids at home continue to use Windows, full stop. They don't even consider alternatives. Whether it's gaming or something else, whether it's doing presentations, whether it's doing essays for school, they continue to use Windows-based desktops with the corresponding applications because they don't know different. If that answers your question.
I think
last Monday we started to make a change.
Okay.
At least here locally in Frankfurt.
That's a good uptick. I appreciate that. We did have Sugar Labs on the show. Got it. I just looked it up. It was like 6 years ago. We have to go back and get these guys back on again. Again, talking about essentially a portable distribution of what's on the eToys machines. And that's where my familiarity with Scratch comes in, that and also being an old small talker from way back. Had you considered something like having, say, Sugar on a Stick, so that people could actually walk away with a USB stick that would require them not to then install it over the top of their parents' Windows machine at home, but actually use it side by side with that, and even take it to school and use it with the school's computers that way. Have you looked at that sort of approach to get people essentially using Linux under the hood, but still having access to things like Scratch and other elements of the eToys environment?
We briefly considered preparing a stick as a giveaway with a pen-based distribution of Linux, not necessarily Sugarland, but I think we kind of toyed around with the idea of using Ubuntu and then having Scratch installed on this stick, but gave it a miss mostly for logistical reasons because of manpower. We are about 15 volunteers. The association, because we are registered, has about 20. That's only a limited amount of manpower, given the fact that you're looking at volunteering effort only. With increasing popularity, the idea is that more and more people will help us with the next iteration of Door Opener Day, and then probably we will have enough manpower to undertake that sort of challenge, if you will, because essentially we have to do it all by ourselves. We have to set up the venue, we have to pick the venue, we have to set up the venue on a shoestring budget, I might add, because we are non-profit. You have to take cuts somewhere, and the pen we decided was one of the victims in that stage for this year.
Now, it sounds like you had, you were at your limit in terms of being able to have registrations, at least for this year. Are other Linux presentation days in the other countries reporting similar sorts of interest, groundswell interest, or varying degrees of success, I would presume? And if so, how do you bring that all up to the kind of success you're seeing?
Interesting question, given the fact that the Linux Presentation Day, as in the formal format as we know it, it's only in its second year. We started with 2015.1, which took place in spring of last year, and then saw a significant uptake with 2015.2. For example, that was also the time when Frankfurt got involved as a local Linux user group. We didn't have the manpower to participate in Frankfurt in 2016.1, which took place around spring. And given the fact that the majority of the Linux associations will go for the 22nd of October, which is, I think, still 1.5 weeks away, the jury is still out on the final participation numbers. But if last year's is in increase between .1 and .2 is anything to go by, you're looking at significant up audience this year. Especially given the fact that we are running this now across Europe, as in not only the German-speaking countries, but Italy, Spain, the UK, and all the rest of it, already kind of chipping in, participating. And I think in the next couple of years, you will see a serious uptake outside German-speaking countries. That is my assumption once the word gets around. For example, I delivered a presentation at last year's OCC camp. I don't know if that unconference rings a bell. The Ubuntu crowd and a bit more in the UK doing this. Unfortunately, this year it doesn't take place for, I think, various reasons, the logistical ones probably being the most important ones. But it was interesting to get the comments after that presentation, because what I essentially did was presented the Linux Presentation Day, which took place then, I think, last year in November, in October then in Liverpool. And quite a few civil rights people as part of the audience walked up after the presentation and said, "Now look, please keep in touch. That's a great idea from a privacy perspective." And now Denmark, Sweden, and Norway is not on the map, but the inquiries are there. And just a matter of time, I reckon, and persistence to get these countries up and running as well.
Great. Actually, we had a question from the chat room about whether or not this was expanding eventually into, say, the you know, the Western world, the U.S. and South America and things like that. Is this something that if you had all your druthers and your giant crystal ball, you could actually foresee a time when this very same format was being followed in the U.S. and other American countries?
Yesterday was Christopher Columbus Day, right? If I'm not completely mistaken. In most parts of the U.S.
Yeah.
So let's do a second Christopher Columbus. Is that it? Why not? As a matter of fact, there was one inquiry in July from a guy in Mass, as in Massachusetts somewhere, I think just outside Boston. But I think it fell through the wayside because we never heard back from him. But with the growing popularity in mainland Europe, if Europe doesn't fall apart within the next couple of years. Let's see.
why don't we make it today every year? Because today is Ada Lovelace Day. So why don't we make this date should be the Linux, to celebrate Ada Lovelace Day. Everyone go out and do a Linux presentation day at their local communities.
Yeah, sounds like a plan to me. So, Aaron, I can count you as a volunteer to do it in the U.S.? Spread the word and get up the website and all the rest of it? Perfect.
Yeah, well, this actually leads – sorry, Randall, I'm going to take over again. This leads into my next question perfectly, which is, you know, what about joining forces with local makerspaces, which are also growing in popularity these days, and to use their facilities – and partner with them to do something similar, because I know that in our makerspace and in a lot of makerspaces around the world, you know, Linux is the preferred operating system. We don't really have a preferred operating system, but people like to use Linux because it opens up all sorts of doors for them to use for projects and things like that. And we actually like to teach people how to use Linux, in the makerspace. So have you ever thought about something like that?
Absolutely. I don't know if the Chaos Communication Club is heard of in the U.S.
It started off as
Chaos Communication Club. It's CCC. It runs a very important security conference between Christmas and New Year every year, I think either in Hamburg or Berlin. Now, the CCC, alongside local makerspaces, has a significant presence in the maker community in Germany. And as a matter of fact, we had a strong desire from the local makerspace in the shape of the CCC in Frankfurt to participate in the LPD. Now, that was before when we decided to go full speed for the mouse door opener day. So the idea is for them, if we decide to go for the original format, if you will, in spring, to do this together with the CCC, i.e. the local makerspace here in Frankfurt. Because of the reasons you mentioned, but also given the fact that the CCC is probably one of the biggest proponents of privacy and civil rights in that space here in Germany. Mm. As a matter of fact, the CCC consults the federal government or advises the federal government on privacy issues.
Yeah, I think I think this is a match made in heaven, really, the more I think about it, because it would be a way to broaden out even beyond Germany, anywhere there's a makerspace, if you made it easy, kind of like Make Magazine did. I don't think they're still doing it. Maybe they are. But they did a maker camp like in the summer. And if you could, you know, put all your best practices together and publish it in the form of a kind of a user guide for running these things and make it easy for them to do, I bet a lot of makerspaces would love to jump on board and start teaching people how to do this. The other question I had was about Raspberry Pi. I mean, Raspberry Pi runs a version of Debian. Have you thought about using Raspberry Pis as part of this, or is the idea really for people to bring their own hardware and install Linux on that?
You saw me smiling, right? As a matter of fact, all of our kiosk systems that we had on the day were Pis running, I think, either Arch or Raspbian. We used the Pi in one of our demos, and the interest was just amazing. Especially when we said, "Now look, this is a full-blown computer. You can run OpenELEC on it, and then you can stream your videos on your TV, assuming that you have an HDMI connection in your TV, and you can buy this for €50 or $30 in the US. I don't know,
yeah,
but it's that cheap. And at the same time, all you need is a laptop, and then you can start programming on that little machine. and the kids were just amazed by this, especially given the fact that it was that kind of inexpensive, because you're talking pocket money range here. So essentially, you can buy it in contrast to a laptop, which more often than not requires funding from the parents.
That's so good to hear, because I think that we've been talking a little bit more on this show about open hardware as well. And so I think that this is an example of where you can see open hardware and open software coming together to Absolutely. Really benefit the community for all kinds of things, education, privacy, just having control over your own thing, building new projects and things like that. I mean, it's just, I could go on and on, but I won't, because I want to get to something you brought up in your notes. I hope I can do this, Randall. you said that there's a, I almost can't say it. There's an Amish adult website set up using open source, and somehow that has something to do with Linux Presentation Day. First of all, I didn't even know there was an Amish adult website.
You never heard about these Amish networks running porn websites? No?
No, no.
Hey, this is your home country. No, as a matter of fact, that was a joke when Randall sent me these kind of questions, and I decided just to put a fast one on him. So I got back to him with some humorous content, and this is one of them. But if current lore, especially the semi-urban type, is anything to go by in the US, quite a few of these adult-only websites are being run by members of certain religious communities. If I'm not a complete mistake. Of course, that'll all change after the next general election you have, right?
Yeah. So, but what does that have to do with Linux Presentation Day?
Nothing. Not much, apart from the fact that probably behind every good adult website, there is probably a Linux server running Apache.
Aaron, you got trolled. You got trolled. Anyway, continue on, Aaron. Continue on. Ask some more questions about making.
I think that's hilarious. But I think that's true, though, and that this is something that people don't realize. And I guess the last question before we wrap up is,
Emacs, is this all?
No. We'll get there. That's coming up. But is this a question about is the Linux desktop going to be relevant in the future? Because one of the things I see, especially with mobile operating systems becoming more and more popular, even the ones that run the Linux kernel. The whole question of, especially about desktops and things like that, is becoming maybe irrelevant in the future. I don't know. And I guess that's the question for you is, if you look in your crystal ball and you look down the road 10 years, do we get to a point where none of this matters, because it's all been obfuscated to the point where it's just running in the background and you're just using whatever the most popular front end is, and you don't really care about what's running behind it?
Interesting question. So we have another 2 hours, is that correct? Should just about be enough.
No, we don't.
No, jokes aside, Shuttleworth filed a bug when he had just found Canonical, indicating that there's something wrong because Linux doesn't have the presence on the desktop. IDC ran a very interesting forecast, I think, in 2012, stating that the number of mobile cores would overtake the number of stationary cores somewhere at the end of 2014. Unfortunately, they got it wrong. That already took place at the beginning of 2014. So more and more people are moving away from desktops to mobile gear, tablets, phones, what have you. So I reckon, and Aaron, I absolutely concur with you on this one. The question whether Linux will rule the desktop is somewhat irrelevant at the moment and in the future, because essentially Linux has taken over the mobile world. Whether you are looking at the cloud side, as in powering these mobile devices, like cloud-based apps, or actually the devices themselves, more often than not, they would run Linux.
Okay, well, that makes sense, and it's a good place to start wrapping up as well. We're almost out of time. I did have a couple more thoughts, though. So, as always, you know, we've got a pretty good platform here for you to make requests. What specific resources are you looking for to help you, both specifically in Germany and also to try to get this deployed in a lot more places? What kinds of people are you looking for? What's time frame? I mean, can somebody get involved now for the one that's coming up in, I guess, March of next year? Or are people setting their own dates anyway, so it doesn't really matter when the next one is? Talk to me about, you know, this is your call to action segment. So go ahead and tell me what you want out here.
Much appreciated. We already have our first volunteer, our second volunteer, apart from the guy in the Massachusetts. Like Aaron just volunteered to take over the U.S. with regards to coordination. Maybe, Randall, you can chip in as well.
No, I have no spare time, really. I have negative spare time at this point. Seriously.
So at least we have two guys in the U.S. That's a start. No, jokes aside, we are always looking for more volunteers on a local basis. The way it works, there is a governing body. Well, governing is pushing it. But there's a central body in Berlin that runs certain aspects of the overall organization, like federal media presence and whatever. But in comparison to the local work, this is only a minor portion of it, of the whole effort. Mm-hmm. What is important, if you happen to be in a large settlement, like a medium-sized town, like a bigger city, whatever, if there's enough people with an interest in Linux, please get in touch with Berlin, get in touch with us, get in touch with me, if you want to participate in an upcoming Linux presentation day. It doesn't have to be on the prescribed date. We did on the 3rd of October. The majority of Linux associations is doing it on the 22nd of October, just coming up. But for the spring one next year, there's ample time to prepare. As I said, please do get in touch. We can only make this a further success if we have more and more associations, like companies like LUGs participating in the effort. So if you are in Europe, if you are in the US, get in touch with Aaron. If you are in Europe, get in touch with me, get in touch with Berlin. And we are looking forward to spread the word further and to spread the event further and to spread the format further and make it a success across Europe.
I'm just getting notes here that Aaron actually had a tough time getting a hold of you. Is your email address on the linuxpresentationday.org website?
There is a generic mail drop that will eventually get to me and other people. But okay. Aaron has my personal email address. More than happy to use this as well.
That's fine. As long as there's some way that people can use email. Oh, yeah. I hate it when there's only a web contact form. That's part of why, starting about 9 years ago when I was crowdsourcing Floss Weekly, I said, no, you all contact the leader and have the leader email me, because I prefer email for my contact mechanism. Anyway, I'm getting irrelevant here for a second. Like I said, we're almost out of time. That was great. Good call for action there. I do have a couple of questions, since you are also a programmer. I have a couple of questions that my audience always wants me to ask. What's your favorite scripting language these days?
Bash and Python. Sorry, it's not Perl.
All right. Well, you know, I never win that one. And what text editor? Yeah, I know. What text editor do you find?
Emacs.
Really? You're an Emacs? Yay! Yeah. Yay! Emacs. I love it. Oh, yeah, because I saw that your notes, you compile Emacs. I compile Emacs every day, actually, for OS X. So I'm their canary in a coal mine to make sure it still runs on OS X all the time. So that's always kind of fun that way. Well, that's great. So did you know there's actually a little bit of me in every copy of Emacs? I wrote the pretty printer, so to turn an S expression back into something that's nicely indented, I wrote that. So
you keep telling your audience, yes.
Yes, yeah, right. It's not the first time. How do you know? You've never heard Floss Weekly before. How do you know?
That was a joke. I listened to every episode.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm your number one fan.
You trolled me on that one. You trolled me on that one, too. All right. Well, before I put my foot any more in my mouth, also one final question. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure gets covered in today's show?
I would like to conclude with a request. Yes, if you're concerned about privacy and don't want to pour any more money in the direction of Redmond, consider Linux and get in touch.
That sounds like a great call. That's good. Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you for coming on the show today and talking about Linux Presentation Day. I know there are a number of people who will now be more interested in it than not hearing about it, of course. It's always a good uptick. And thank you for taking your time.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. That was Dr. Christoph Zimmermann talking to us about Linux Presentation Day. What do you think, Aaron?
I think it's great. I mean, I wish there was more people doing this here in the States and in other countries. And it's an interesting take. I mean, back when we first started, I didn't have anything to do with it. Back when Linux first started kind of taking hold, the call, of course, from Richard Solomon and others were around proprietary software that you had to, you know, you don't throw your freedom away by letting other people who don't give you access to the code do whatever they want with it, and you don't have access to a blah, 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 right? That was the big thing. And now it's really interesting to see things maybe coming back around and to a different aspect of why you should run Linux and why open source software is important, and that's because of privacy. And that's why I asked the question about Europe versus US, because we talk about this a lot on This Week in Google, of course. If for those of you that watch it, you'll know. One of the topics that comes up almost every time is privacy. Jeff Jarvis has done a lot of thinking about this and a lot of writing on the topic. And it is a concern that people have, certainly in Europe, but I think also growing more and more here in the US and in other places as well. And it's a great reason to start running Linux, because you have control over exactly what happens on your computer, which you don't have on other operating systems. So I think that was a big learning for me, or at least a takeaway from this discussion. And also just the fact that, hey, this is something that probably people should get involved with, teaching people how to use Linux. It's a really worthwhile endeavor, and more people should pick that up, especially if you run a makerspace like I do.
Awesome. And also, it's turning into more and more jobs for more and more people, too. I mean, if you know Absolutely. Linux out there, you're probably, a lot more hireable these days because a lot more stuff's moving to that. Linux powers, probably 80%, 90% of the websites you visit every day. I know, because I talk to a lot of them as potential clients. So it's always sort of interesting there. You know, I keep thinking I'm going to have to learn more and more about Linux, just because that's how the crowd has gone. But I run FreeBSD on my servers, by the way. So all of my servers and all of my clients' servers all run my clients' servers. That sounds bizarre. It's like cruises.com is all running FreeBSD as well. So, but my other big client, ZipRecruiter, is all running Linux everywhere, and soon to be moving to Docker and containers and things like that. So I have got to catch up with all of that. Speaking of catching up with all of that, Aaron, thank you for your comments as well. We got some upcoming guests. Next week, if the phrase, "you are in a maze of twisty, tiny passages all alike," rings a bell, you're old first. but if you remember the old command line text-based adventure games and dungeon games and things like that, like Grand Colossal Cave, which is where that particular phrase comes from, the Interactive Fiction Technology Foundation is interested in preserving ways of both running old games and also building new ones by building technologies about that. They also run the International Fiction Competition, so Interactive Fiction Competition. So we'll be talking to them next week. That'll be a lot of fun. There's no show 2 weeks from today. I'm going to be on a cruise ship. I'll actually be docked in Mazatlan, Mexico, on that particular day. And our guests just canceled for that day, so I just figured, let's just ruin the show. Let's just blow the show away. Aaron, sorry you are not being called in to be the host role for that one, but I'm sure you'll forgive me because you're doing enough other stuff for us. Thank you very much. Following that, Chick Tech, which is dedicated to retaining women in the technology workforce. That's entirely something else. MetaBrains, which is a community-maintained database. You might know them from their original Music Brains project, which is a way of uploading all of your unlabeled MP3 tracks that you have ripped from your own CD. No piracy here. Your own CD, and yeah, you got to have label them all. Music Brains was around to actually take care of that, and MetaBrains has gone and expanded to all sorts of other things that are really, really cool with a lot of open-source software behind the scenes and open-source databases as well, which I also appreciate. On my ZSH. Oh, no, on. I keep reading my own H. Oh, my ZSH. I run ZSH as a shell, and there are tools for managing your ZSH config, which can get very unwieldy. Unlike last week where I said it can get wieldy. What the heck does that mean? It gets to the point where it can manage really well. Not unwieldy for those sorts of things. They let anybody do the show. On my birthday, in fact, we're going to have a show on Zalando, which is a fashion platform that has 19 million users, mostly in Europe. But they have many open source sub projects, kind of like we had Capital One a while back that was open sourcing a lot of their infrastructure stuff. So Zalando is doing the same thing. And so we're talking to them also about fashion and fashion topics. Well, not too much about that, mostly about the open source stuff they're doing. I just added to the schedule. I'm always adding new things to the schedule, which is always fun. We have gRPC, which is pronounced gRPC according to their own style guide. This is Google's remote procedure call interface. So if you have to talk from one application to another, possibly on the same machine, possibly on different machines, you have all sorts of issues like rendezvous, like high availability, like discovery in general. All sorts of wonderful things, failover, things like that. gRPC is what they're using for a lot of the projects internally. They have open sourced that so that we all can take advantage of Google's internal technology. I always love that when we get to do that. We have a couple of projects that are in the short rescheduling queue. Let's use the right English, Randall. Karina, which is the Instanon ready-to-use, easy-to-use native container environment out of the Red Hat guys. We got Twine, which is actually writing the software for the interactive fiction thing, but they're going to end up actually being down in the December schedule because it's the only slots I have open now. Again, to see these slots and to see who I'm actually talking to, you can go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. From there is linked the view our upcoming guests giant Google spreadsheet. You can go check things out there. If you have a project that's not on that list, you can, again, contact the community coordinator or the project lead, whoever seems to be more appropriate, and have them contact me, merlin@stonehenge.com. If you forget that address, that is also on the homepage, twit.tv/floss. We're still booking, again, the last few remaining slots in Q4, and then I'll open up Q1. Boy, I tell you, this thing just keeps rolling forward and forward. We have a live stream like we did today for pretty much every show at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays. That does vary based on the daylight savings time on the west coast of the U.S. So not the west coast of Europe, not the west coast of South America. It varies based on the U.S. time. But if you can figure out what time it's going to be at, we are live at twit.tv. We have a chat room there. We took a number of questions. I always say a number because it, you know, two is a number. One is a number. Zero is actually a number. So I can always say a number of questions from the chat room today. And follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. Gets tweeted over to that. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. You can also, that gets tweeted over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, where I also announce pretty much what I'm eating for lunch every day for some bizarre reason. Actually, that's because it comes from my my Instagram feed, so that gets tweeted over to there. I am, again, going to be on a cruise in 2 weeks. I'll be sailing out of San Diego down to Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan, and the third one is Cabo San Lucas. So I'll be having an enjoyable time there on yet another Insight cruise, going to be attending some sessions when we're at sea. That should be fun and warm and get me out of this rain I'm experiencing up here in Olympia. Enough plugs for me. Aaron, anything for you?
Oh, yeah, sure. By the way, send some of that rain down here. We could use some rain. Okay. Just kind of, you know, get the fan out or something. Point it my direction because we could use some rain down here in the Bay Area. We already talked about one thing I'm working on. Keep your put a bookmark, put a note, a big reminder. Whenever I get this book done and it comes out, you're going to want to go pick up a copy. It's called Linux for Makers. And if you're interested in reviewing it, I'm looking for feedback, especially when it comes people like Christoph that have taught people that are new to Linux or people that are new to Linux. I'm looking for some reviewers there. Yeah, exactly. Like, so you could reach out and say, what does this mean? I don't get it. What does that mean? You didn't explain this well enough. Because the problem I'm having is I tend to assume that everyone knows what a terminal is and what you do with it, and that's not always the case. And other than that, you can follow me on Google Plus. I'm always talking about different projects I'm working on, different electronics and things like that that I do, or just things that are going on in the makerspace that I run. That's Benicia Makerspace here in Northern California. If you're in the area, come check out that website as well. That's BeniciaMakerspace.org.
Very cool. And yes, I do recall as writing, you know, mini tutorial thingies over the years. One of the hardest things is remembering or at least observing where it is you're jumping from one fact to the next without providing the right bridge. And so I completely relate to the problem you're having there. It's one of the reasons, for example, that I'm running over time, so I probably shouldn't get into this. But let me take one more indulgence here because it's my show. That learning Perl starts sort of in the middle of programming, starts where you already know arrays and subroutines. Because I don't remember how I learned those, so I can't teach that. You have to remember how you learn something. What was important to you about getting this particular concept before you can write about it, or at least ideally before you can write about it and teach other people about it. So whenever you're learning something new, please take notes about what it is that really got you over the hump, because you may want to write about it someday. And Aaron, you're obviously in that slot now trying to do all that. So Aaron, thank you for being the co-host again today. I really appreciate that, and providing your Linux background, especially your beginning Linux background. We're trying to teach others about beginning Linux. Really appreciate that, Aaron.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and before I run totally out of time, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.